BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
It's 753 days since Russia began its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. As we record, it's just after 10 o'clock in the evening in the United Kingdom on Sunday. Voting has ended. 3 days of voting in Russia's presidential election. And Vladimir Putin has almost immediately claimed victory.
Хочу поблагодарить всех вас и всех граждан страны за поддержку и это доверие. Спасибо большое.
It was an acceptance speech in all but name, where Vladimir Putin thanked the people of Russia for their trust and support. He appeared on state television, speaking from his campaign headquarters, standing flanked by young people.
Спасибо. Спасибо большое.
Wearing T-shirts saying, Putin, Russia, victory. Vladimir Putin was as defiant as ever, sounding belligerent and saying Russia is determined to accomplish its objectives in Ukraine.
So, Vitaly, we have the numbers. A landslide, 87%.
According to preliminary results.
For Vladimir Putin. And the turnout, 74.2%.
So these figures are preliminary, but they are pretty high. They are the kind of figures that Vladimir Putin will want to see if he needs or if he tries to use this election to legitimize his continued rule. But having said that, Russians will wake up tomorrow in a Russia that's pretty much the same as it was today and yesterday, ruled by Vladimir Putin, and without an organized opposition force to challenge him.
Well, we're still going to have a look to see what this election means for Vladimir Putin, for Russia, and the war in Ukraine.
This is Ukrainecast.
Ukrainecast from BBC News.
Ukraine is an epicenter of unbearable heartache and pain.
Millions of people are without heating, without water.
Putin is the aggressor.
He will be ready to use nuclear weapons.
They killed him and fled.
I do not know how we managed to survive.
I want people to know the truth.
Hello, this is Lise Doucette and I'm in the Ukrainecast studio.
And this is Vitaly Shevchenko, and I'm also in the Ukraine Car studio.
And I'm Steve Rosenberg, and I'm in Moscow.
Steve, we can see you on the screen. It's a cold Moscow day, and it's been a very long day. After this, you'll call it a day?
Briefly, and then up again early in the morning for another day. It's relentless here. Tomorrow, we're expecting Vladimir Putin to hold his victory rally on Red Square, which is combined with a big 10 years of Crimea annexation rally. So that's tomorrow. But today's been all about this 3-day election and the results.
And Vitaly, it's been that kind of a marathon for you too. I heard you really early this morning. I interviewed you yesterday. And now here we are. It's just after 10 in the evening.
It's gone 10 in the evening, yes. Just as for Steve, I think this is going to be my last thing that I do today before going to bed.
Yes, but I'm sure it'll take a long time to fall asleep. I have to say, Steve, I've never seen in any election the gap between the exit polls, the announcement of results, and the winner taking to the stage and holding a press conference. You almost could think they knew what was going to happen tonight.
Yes, you could think that, couldn't you, Lise? I mean, look, it's no surprise, really. I mean, we expected a landslide victory for Vladimir Putin. That's exactly what happened. I thought it would be something like 86.4%, so not far off. But, you know, the whole election system here is geared to ensure that one man comes out on top, and that man is Vladimir Putin, and to ensure that he wins big. And he will now take this landslide victory and wave it and show, look, how popular I am. That means that everything I do in Russia, all my policies, all my actions, have the full support, the overwhelming support of the Russian people. And that goes for the war in Ukraine. It goes for what he's doing inside Russia, turning this country into a sort of increasingly militaristic society, with this confrontation with the West. The last time, you know, Russians voted in 2018, they did not vote for a war against Ukraine. So now he can, having renewed his mandate, if you like, he can say, the country's behind me, and I will carry on. I think that's what we're going to see, continuation.
And the numbers matter. It was a higher turnout than the last election, as you mentioned, before the Ukraine war, and he won by a higher margin than the last time. That adds extra weight to the victory. Was that really key for him?
Oh, absolutely. Numbers do matter for Vladimir Putin. I mean, was this result a surprise? No. Is it important to Vladimir Putin? Yes, for the reasons I gave, that he wants to have this mandate to say that the country's behind him. And he wants to boost his legitimacy in the eyes of his people and in the eyes of the Russian political elite. Whether he manages to do that in the eyes of the West, that's another matter, because already, you know, there's been a lot of criticism from outside of Russia, from the West, of the kind of election that we've seen here, which is clearly not a level playing field, putting it lightly.
Vitaly, I just want to ask you, you watch every twist and turn so quickly. What were your first thoughts about the choreography of that, his first appearance on the stage? It would have been designed in a way he knew the world would be watching. So there he was, the vibrant leader, these young people behind him with these T-shirts, Putin, Russia, victory. What struck you about the choreography?
He's so unapologetic. He is so defiant. And with this quote-unquote election out of the way, of course it will be easier for him to take more unpopular measures. Maybe a mobilization again, higher taxes, tighter restrictions. We'll just see. But that speech showed a very strongman leader, if you like.
Steve, did anything else strike you tonight? I know you've been working flat out these 3 days of voting. You covered the election campaigns. And then this final celebration at the end, the announcement of victory and President Putin appearing on a world stage.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he mentioned the word, the name Navalny.
За несколько дней до ухода господина Навального из жизни мне некоторые коллеги сказали.
I hadn't heard him mention Navalny's name in public before. Yeah, he was asked a question about Alexei Navalny, and he mentioned Mr. Navalny. Perhaps that reflects his level of confidence now that he's secured this fifth presidential term. He claimed that it was sad that Mr. Navalny had died, but he said other prisoners die, and they die in American jails too, he said. And he mentioned... what had been reported, actually, over the last few weeks, that there had been talk of some kind of prisoner exchange, Mr. Navalny, in exchange for Russian prisoners in Western jails. He claimed that he'd agreed to that, but what happened, happened, he said. But yes, the fact that he actually mentioned Alexei Navalny by name does perhaps suggest a confidence now in Vladimir Putin. You know, this is someone who 2 years ago launched this special military operation, which went badly wrong and became this war in Ukraine. And yet, 2 years on, he, I think, still believes that he's going to win this. He looks at what's happening in Europe. He looks at what's happening in the United States. He thinks he's got the staying power that Western leaders do not have. And that also, I think, explains his confidence.
Sometimes I wonder, Steve, what is the point of all this? Of course, it's about legitimizing his continued rule and reconfirming his mandate. And Vladimir Putin looks emboldened and empowered. But didn't he have all of this before? He was firmly in control of pretty much everything. And now, what happens now? I mean, now that this is done and he's happy, anointed, what can he do now? What will he do now?
I think he's just continue doing what he has been doing. I mean, Putin Mark V, his fifth presidential term, I don't think it's going to be much different from Putin Mark IV. I think the direction of travel for Russia has been pretty clear now for the last couple of years, and that's why we're going to see, I think, you know, an increasing crackdown on civil society inside of Russia, more repression, and we're going to see more confrontation on the international stage, confrontation with the West. But elections are important. You know, they were important in the Soviet Union, even in the USSR under communism. There were things called elections, and they are important for Vladimir Putin to show his people that he is legitimate. He will take this 87% or however many it will be by the end and hold it up and tell the world, look, I am super popular. My country, my people are behind me. And that will give him the confidence to do whatever he's going to do next.
Steve, is it possible to understand how important elections are to the Russians, who seem to have turned out in large numbers? And there will be quite a large percentage who would have voted genuinely for President Putin. What is it for them?
It's a really interesting question, Lise. It's two questions, really. What do Russians actually think about Vladimir Putin, on the one hand? And what do Russians think of elections? I get the feeling from talking to Russians as we travel across the country that even most of the people who vote for Vladimir Putin don't do so because they love him, they idolise him, but because they don't believe there's anyone else to vote for. There's no real alternative. A lot of people say, you know, if not Putin, then who? And that is precisely what the Kremlin has wanted to achieve. It's been engineered by the Kremlin, which has cleared the political stage, the political landscape here, of any real rivals or challenges to Vladimir Putin. As regards elections, yes, many Russians do want to vote. And yet, on the other hand, so many Russians say they don't believe they can influence the situation in this country. You know, I remember 30 years ago, 35 years ago, towards the end of the Soviet Union, people did start to believe that they could influence their future. And in 1991, do you remember the huge crowds that came onto the streets of Moscow? You know, when the statue of Iron Felix, the Felix Dzerzhinsky, came down, people at that moment believed that they could influence, they could affect the future. Over the last 30 years, I think a lot of people have lost that belief. So on the one hand, yes, people go and vote. On the other hand, I think few people actually believe they can influence what happens in their country.
Yes, Russia's walked a long path from the moment when opposition protesters could topple statues to a situation when all they can do is come to polling stations at midday and just be there silently without actually displaying any sort of political sentiment.
Well, in fact, that was a question that we had from one of our listeners on Discord, who goes by the name of Sasha. And she asked this question for you, Steve. I have read a number of reports of very long queues appearing at polling stations in many cities in Russia on Sunday at noon in apparent protest of the rigging of this election. Are BBC able to verify this has actually happened? Maybe from the BBC's Russia editor, Steve Rosenberg.
It really happened. I can verify that for sure. I'd never seen queues like that at Russian polling stations. We were at a polling station on the edge of Moscow earlier today, and it was quite astonishing. Just before midday, suddenly this large queue, I mean, I say large, several dozen people suddenly formed a queue outside the polling station to get in. I'd never seen such lines. And, you know, we spoke to people there. One man said to me, you know, he'd come. It was important for him to come and take part in this silent protest, if you like, to see other faces, to see that there were like-minded people who shared the same outlook on life as he did. And to remind him that another Russia, another future was possible. So, yes, this happened, and not just at that polling station we happened to be at, but lots of other polling stations too. It was never going to change the result. But what it did, I think, was to show to people like the guy I spoke to that there are other people who have the same views. It was the same after or during Alexei Navalny's funeral. Suddenly, lots of people came out who'd been absent as a collective for the last 2 years. And they saw each other. And they saw that these like-minded people were still there. They hadn't gone away. People who want a different kind of Russia. People who believe in a more democratic future. Who don't believe in war in Ukraine. They're still there. In that sense, I think it was important, actually. It was never going to change the result of the election. But for that portion, that section of the population, it was important.
My question would be, though, is what kind of practical impact this, well, largely symbolic outpouring of feeling is going to have. So people came to the cemetery or to polling stations. They stood there for a while and then they went home. And the Kremlin would be hoping that they stay home and the Kremlin could safely forget that Alexei Navalny ever existed.
I mean, when we're talking about practical impact, you know, these are very dark days for the Russian opposition or people who have a different view from that of the Kremlin. They find it difficult to know what they can do and what the future has in store for them. But as I say, this silent protest today, collectively coming together at Alexei Navalny's funeral, at least it reminds them that they're not alone. And I think that gives them at least some hope and strength to keep hoping.
What would be the risk, Steve, for those who took part in this silent protest? If you, for example, showed up for Alexei Navalny's funeral, then you can be picked up and said, you went to the funeral, and so you're a supporter. But someone today could say, well, no, I've just happened to come here at this time. And there was a report that some of the security people told people to go away, come back in a few hours to vote. And we did hear that at least 80 protesters were arrested in Russian cities today. But did people go to take part today knowing that they were putting themselves in danger or they could get away with it?
Well, I think that they knew that there was a risk. I mean, the Moscow prosecutor's office had issued a warning saying that large numbers of voters gathering at midday at polling stations in Moscow would be considered an illegal mass public event and therefore could be deemed illegal. So, yes, I think there was the knowledge that there was a risk. On the other hand, as Russian citizens, they had the right to come at any time they chose to a polling station and cast their votes. They weren't doing anything illegal. They were fulfilling their rights as a citizen. So in that sense, there wasn't a risk. There were no slogans chanted. There were no placards held up at the polling station I was at. People queued up quietly, went inside and did whatever they did, whether they voted against Vladimir Putin or for Vladimir Putin, or sport their ballots, and then they came out and left.
Gentlemen and colleagues, I think we should bring an end to this conversation, even though there would be so much more to talk about. But before we do, Steve and Vitaly, why don't you leave us with one last image of a moment, of a voter, of something which you will keep with you for a long time to come of this whole process. Steve?
I will never forget what a lady told me a few days ago in a town about 60 miles from Moscow. She said that she was going to vote for Vladimir Putin and she hoped that this election would end the war, brackets, with a Russian victory, close brackets. And I said to her, well, don't you think that, you know, Vladimir Putin's been in power for 25 years, basically, in a country of 145 million people. Don't you think there's anybody else who could run the country? And she said, oh, yes, you know, we have lots of other, you know, talented leaders who could, in an emergency, run Russia. In an emergency. So the idea of a Putin-less Russia, meaning an emergency, I thought that was quite interesting. And the Kremlin would be quite happy for Russians to think that.
Whatever an emergency is. Vitaly?
What's going to stay with me is one image from a video from, I believe, the occupied part of Kherson region in Ukraine. I was doing some research for an article about the mechanics of the vote in occupied parts of Ukraine. And Russia-controlled electoral commissions in occupied southeastern Ukraine, they were churning out videos of happy voters, of happy, harmless, inoffensive electoral officials talking to locals in a very friendly way, very polite, very charming, mostly female officials. And then in one video, there was this man with a gun and a military uniform peering out from behind a corner as if to check, everything's all right? Yeah, okay, keep talking. And then he disappeared behind the corner again. And that showed me a lot about how these things work. That there's what you're supposed to see, and there's also something that you will never see on Russian state TV.
Well, Steve, we may hear in the days to come your musical interpretation on the piano, on the keys, about how this all has gone. But for now, we're going to say thank you very much for all of your, as always, excellent coverage on these momentous events in Russia. They matter to Russia most of all, but they also matter to the world.
You're welcome. Take care, Lise. Bye, Vitaly.
And I think, Vitaly, we both have to thank our loyal Ukraine cast listeners
for bearing with us.
It's been great being in the Ukraine cast studio with you again.
It's great to have you here.
And wherever you're listening in the world, thank you for listening and take care.
Goodbye.
Ukraine cast from BBC News.